Find out the best ways to service.com.
This is the BBC.
You're listening to K1 FM.
You are. You're with the BBC.
Welcome to the World Today from the BBC in London at 23 hours GMT with Lawrence Pollard and Fergus Nicol.
Of Britain's three largest political parties meet in their second televised debate.
Can you tell them apart?
If it's about judgment, it's about delivering a better future for this country. I'm Ewan.
Get a new team running the country from May the 7th, and you won't be stuck with what you've got now.
If we do things differently, we can be proud once again of the role we can play.
Also in the programme, we hear about the North Korean flashback in Western Zimbabwe.
In Thailand.
And Obama goes to Wall Street with...
Free market was never meant to be a free license to take whatever you can get, however you can get it.
Thanks for being with us on The World Today.
BBC News with Marion Marshall. Britain's three main political leaders have been staking their claim to be the country's next prime minister, based on foreign policy. On Britain's role in Afghanistan, the current prime minister, Gordon Brown, said the country's military priority.
Every week I get a report, sometimes every day, of terrorist plots, most in Pakistan area, and we have got to deal with. So to keep the streets safe in Britain, where it is.
The Conservative leader, David Cameron, said Britain had to learn from mistakes in fighting the war in Afghanistan, while the leader of the Liberal Democrats...
This is Ray Hill. I'm in the studio, radio station KPFT in Houston. You're listening to HD2 channel. If it is working, we've been having some technical difficulties, or you're listening to this show on a link to executionwatch.com. On Thursday, the 22nd, and there is an execution, the process of which should have begun at 6 o'clock. Elizabeth is preparing to do... do you have a intro to this piece worked up? Yeah.
Okay, I had the billboard.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. We're to be here in just a second, and we'll be right back. Tonight we have Jim Skelton and other guests in the studio, and we'll be getting reports.
William Berkeley is a prisoner in Texas. By the end of the show, he will be dead. This is Execution Watch. But stay with us as we witness the legal homicide in Floydsville, death penalty capital of the Western world. Execution Watch host Ray Hill, legal and death house Professor Dennis Longmire, Houston Vigil reporter Dave Atwood, and special guest Paris Carriger, who spent 17 years on Arizona's death row before being exonerated. The Execution Watch begins.
And we're here tonight to watch the execution of William Joseph Berkeley. Berkeley, parentage. He was an American dependent, so he is an American. His parents were stationed in Germany, and he... had just turned 21 when the police arrested him in March of 2000, charging them with the murder of serving a life term, and more at our executionwatch.org website. Back page on William Berkeley with Professor Longmire. Professor!
Hello, how are you, Ray?
I am well.
Well, you're right. It's not a good way to open that greeting.
And in Huntsville.
Well, there are 12, 13 of us on the corner. There's another small group, another group of about 10 attending a seminar, and they've come down to watch this from afar.
Okay.
All of the witnesses have gone in that the execution is going forward. There are two different student groups down here. One is from Sam Houston State University, Bearcats for Life. And one of them is interesting. There are five representatives from each of those groups here, being pro-life organizations that are on the corner in opposition to the death that's taking place tonight.
And what are they
saying? You broke up on that, Ray, but I've asked them, and none of them wants to speak, and so they're prayerful right now in meditation and prayer.
Okay. And the case... And you know how to get in touch with Elizabeth, should you have some. Thank you, sir. And that was Professor at Sam Houston University in Huntsville, and a regular vigilant. What about this case?
Truthfully, and maybe I've read too many death penalty cases, but if this was tried today, I don't think they'd ever seek the death, but I was enthusiastic about it. Because what happened, this guy, Mr. Rock, cruising in El Paso around 10:30 or 11, trying to fix off. From the state's viewpoint, they saw this young lady by the name of Sophie at an ATM to withdraw, I think, $20 out of the ATM. Mm-hmm. And on the ATM camera, it showed Berkeley approaching her car and shooting inside the car. Then she, meaning the complainant, she with a bloody face goes back to the ATM and draws out $200. Mm-hmm. And then they don't see anybody out in the desert outside of El Paso in New Mexico. And then when they discover her, she's shot like five or six times in the face. She'd been sexually assaulted and left abandoned on the side of the road. And what's broke is that Jacques Martin, the guy named by the name of Jacques, found a driver's license. And he recognized a photograph on the driver's license when they died. And so she called the police and said, there's something going on here because my husband had come to my house and they got a copy of the driver's license of the dead Gerhenschen of Berkeley, and he confessed. And he signed a written confession. He was an only child, and his father was a apparently strong military guy and apparently talked to his son. And that's when Berkeley admitted using a .22 gun, said he'd stolen it from his father, and found the gun. And here's kind of the crux of the argument that's gone up on the current writs, is that initially testified that the ballistic... The FBI later recanted in that testimony.
Really?
Yeah, and that's what was shortly before the U.S. Supreme Court. The problem with this case is a couple of things. Number one, they had DNA evidence showing the sperm found inside the dead lady. Two written confessions from Berkeley, mm-hmm. plausible, because what he claimed is that he had known this Martinez girl before, had met her, and that they had casual, consensual sex that night. Well, the problem was she had left her house around 10 o'clock to go on a blind date, and I think it'd be highly unusual for a lady on a blind date to run into an old friend, stop and have intercourse in the car, then go to her blind date. The co-defendant, this guy Jacques, did not testify for Mr. Berkeley at all. In fact, he was later tried on a capital murder case in San Antonio in Bexar County and was backed up. And a lot of this, of course, changed after he'd been convicted. But that's basically it. And what's interesting about this case is, like you and I have been down, there's absolutely no prior criminal history. None. He was 21 years old when they basically did at the punishment hearing, because, I mean, guilt or innocence is pretty well assured because you got DNA evidence tying into the ballistics expert from the way he repudiated. And then the third thing they had was his two written confessions. And, of course, his father was the one that persuaded him to do the second confession. Where they were guilt or innocence was a foregone conclusion, his primary punishment issue. Punishment hearing, as they called a whole bunch of co-workers that had worked with him on Times Fast, including a former girlfriend.
This is the state called.
Yeah, well, of course the state called him. And they called him pretty obnoxious. He acted like a typical German sometimes, you know. Yeah. And they really, it seems to me, when I read the case on the punishment hearing, he was apparently rude and made some racial slurs against people, had made mm-hmm. some racial slurs, Oriental people, and made some more ethnic slurs. And, of course, his ex-girl.
Talked about his mama.
And he also talked bad about it to his mama, according to them. And so he really got the death penalty at work.
Well, that's
basically what they proved. And I never trust that testimony because God knows what. And the ex-girlfriend, of course, claimed he tried to choke her one time and said he was very... that's really the only thing they had indicating violence. Plus, they had some testimony about their brick because a guy owed him money. There were some tests they did in that movie. When they stuck it up to his nose and threatened to cut his nose off, but didn't do anything.
Yeah.
But there was...
And information.
Hey, all of it was. And what's kind of like they just literally had very little on punishment, except pretty horrendous, I suppose. But really, it's not much different than... I'm not trying to casualize or anything, but it's not much different than any of the type of kills.
Well, is there anything about El Paso, Texas, that would cause them to be untimely harsh?
Well, one thing, and I know this from experience, I tried a couple of cases out there, and I picked some juries in El Paso. Real, real conservative community. I was extremely surprised because I used to work in the Valley a lot, open-minded and pretty liberal. But, man, down there, they pretty much march in goose step because I think a lot of it is because Fort Bliss is there, and it's a huge installation. Extremely conservative, and I was really surprised when I picked some juries out there. That was a case. Plus, it was a young, pretty Hispanic woman who had just graduated from high school and going to college, and that part was bad, and then shooting her a bunch of times didn't look good. But it's not, in my opinion, today they wouldn't seek the death penalty.
What can you tell us about the quality?
The appeal was very thorough, the direct appeal. I mean, they did a well know in capital cases where you really look at errors during jury selection and during the punishment hearings. They had a real interesting punishment issue. As you know, we have an issue called a penury issue about somebody's deprived childhood to show their should he did sort of a reverse, not a reverse penury, but sort of a penury. But he was alone a great deal. He claimed his father was in the service and was gone a great deal, and his mother worked outside the home, and he didn't have anybody with him to argue that was mitigating evidence, and the special issues didn't cover that. And of course, they immediately flushed it. I mean, they did this, of course, extremely thorough job on the direct appeal, and there was nothing, in my opinion, lawyer did, because when you have a case with DNA evidence implicating your client, and then you have two confessions, one of which was stimulated by the father talking to him, that's a rough hill to climb.
This is a little over 10 years later after the initial arrests, and then there would be subsequent trials, less than 10 years ago.
Right.
And so this is...
Because, again, there was nothing in the direct appeal about the lawyer being ineffective. And the only way that I could see where the lawyer was sort of mitigating evidence he didn't investigate on punishment, but I can't imagine what that would possibly be.
Any question about emotional stability or instability?
He had quit high school, I think, in the 10th grade and got a GED. And there's a mental disturbance, none of that at all. He was just a 21-year-old person full of 21-year-old hormones. But his dope usage was not that major. It was, I guess, most kids. Yeah. And the two Goldust twins of El Paso. Extensive. And he said that he regretted several things, not going into the military. But he came from a good family, and there was no abuse to speak of, except his parents were ab people. That's nothing unusual about having latchkey kids. I mean, that happens a lot. More surprising, had he been somebody with a mental disorder or some behavior problem, and surely he would have gotten in trouble as a juvenile, would have picked up some cases along the way that you typically see when these
kids
have
problems. But no indication of that.
None. No criminal history at all. None. What
Dick's thing work?
They couldn't find out from the opinions. All its safety agent testified that the gun found that shooting, and later the FBI recanted or repudiated that testimony, but none of the opinions said why they did so. Later went up.
Sure.
And of course, in an interview that was given yesterday, Berkeley complained bitterly about his lawyer not investigating the case. The lawyer didn't do, because when you make those accusations, you normally say, well, this should have been done, and giving you something that should have been done.
Yeah, but folks will say almost anything if they're looking down a 16-gauge needle.
Yeah.
And so that's an act of desperation on his part. But what confuses me, trial, that there was these facts are true about this bullet and this gun, and then for whatever reason expert witness repudiates their own testimony. Why isn't that important?
It is important, but you got to think it's been around. And what they do when an error is committed, in this particular case, after the FBI, big issue on appeal is, would the result, but it would have been different had he not taken. What they always point to is the overwhelming evidence of guilt. And since the DNA matched, and since he gave two confessions, what they would say in cases like this, because remember how that works when you have something that's been excluded on the harmless error rule, you've got to say that the result would have been different. What they always look at is the overwhelming evidence of guilt in this particular case, since they had the DNA evidence and the confessions, and since his story was so implausible. I was wrong on ballistics. His harmless punishment didn't contribute to guilt or innocence because there were other factors. And we complain about bitterly is the harmless error rule because although error was committed, and they'll admit it all the other evidence, they go, what they always typically say, they had overwhelming evidence of guilt and they didn't contribute to either innocence.
Which is in itself a value judgment on the court's part.
It's a shot, exactly. But they've done that in the harmless error rule. Has really hurt the defense bar, especially by really, really hurt.
Well, Elizabeth has left the room. She's going to track down Professor Longmire and see if anything's happened in Huntsville, or perhaps find David Atwood. David Atwood is here in Houston. Jim, you think the same set of facts had happened in Houston, Texas, a life without parole case.
Yeah, because what they're doing, and, you know, it's people seem to be not believe. The reason they've backed away from so many death penalty cases, number one, expenses, a capital case, and economically it's not feasible. A death sentence.
All right, I'm going to let you do that, Elizabeth, because I get... Elizabeth,
how are you?
What is going on in Huntsville?
Well, the walls unit and are walking back into the main prison administration unit, which is the unofficial and is now over.
Well, I didn't ask you family of the executed party.
Exactly who the witnesses are. I didn't talk to anybody here, but I don't know if there were any direct members of his family, but there were wet half of the condemned.
Okay.
There are two waves of witnesses. The first wave are all media.
Media.
The second wave would include anyone who is witnessing. Any witnesses for the fan in the walls unit before I even...
Mr. Berkeley...
Yes, there were witnesses for Mr. Berkeley. I know one of them was a spiritual advisor who has been visiting him for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I know one of them was... who had been representing him on his appeals, and they were.
A man and a woman, perhaps?
I don't remember.
Okay. Jill is breaking up there?
Yes. The crowds are starting to leave. All of the criminal justice people have left, and now the only remaining groups are the two group spiritual advisors. Kathleen Cox, if anybody out there...
Oh, yes, everyone knows Kathleen.
Absolutely.
If you get close to her, give her my love.
I'm standing next to her. Grace sends his love.
All right.
Getting a little threadborne in all of this.
I hear the flutter of wings.
Oh, listen to this.
She speaking of angels, when she hears your name, she hears the flutter of wings.
And she is a wonderful lady, and we appreciate
you. You are a wonderful lady.
Okay, Dennis, okay. We're going to go hunt down Dave Atwood and get a report from the Houston Vigil.
Vigil, attention to this horrific thing that we do.
Another one coming up on the 27th, unless,
you're right.
Unless yeah, we're so. Fortunate enough to get a stay in Mr. Bustamante's case.
Let's keep praying.
Professor Longmire, who is professor of criminality and a regular reporter from the Vigil's where the death chamber is located. And while Elizabeth goes down and tracks down Dave Atwood, who is a board member of the penalty here in Houston, and vigils on this occasion are held on the occasion of an execution all over the state. We've had ribbon and in Houston. I suppose there are similar vigils going on in Dallas. But if you keep listening to this program and Texas keeps killing people at the rate that it is doing over the state. And there's something to be said about the loyalty and the commitments. Some of them church connected, but not all of them. Dave Atwood is active in several Catholic from whence his organization, Texas Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. Come from, and by the way, the acronym of that is the website TCADP.org. TCADP. Dr. Longmire is also with that organization. A group in Huntsville can be reached at www.cg. That is part of Sam Houston University's with TDCJ officials and the parole. I was there. I met some of the folks that make the system work. Long tails, and none of them carried pitchforks and looked like they were from extraordinarily hot places, who work for the state of Texas in the criminal justice business. And if you, I fun game, Jim, I go in and try to cut them out of the crowd, get them on the side, and I'm talking about the powerful people, I'm talking about director of criminal justice, director, and say, you know, what if you had the job you've got right now? But this day, you didn't have all that crap that was on the desk.
Mm-hmm.
Left by your predecessor, and you could work outside the culture. Are we ready to do Dave Atwood?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Corner of Benz and Main Street, I guess it is.
Okay.
And right by St. Paul's Methodist Church, right there by the museum. In the
St. Paul's.
Right.
And how many folks did you have tonight?
We had 7 people out. Not a big crowd, quality, high quality group of people, and we had a very good lot of traffic. People draw.
You carry signs so they know what you're up to, right?
Yeah, we have a big banner that says "Stop Executions," and we always use that in addition to our other signs, so everybody knows what we're about. That's no question.
Is sometime a floating thing. You've been at St. Anne's, you've been at the...
We move it around. We have 4 places now in the city that this corner is one of them. We always try to pick a place that has high traffic density, and of course over here, because they're heading either into the museum or out of the museum.
Yeah, and they're in the museum.
Right, right. And we got a pretty good response, you know, pretty positive response. I think we might have had 1 negative out of all the people that went by us today.
David, did you call?
I saw the where he was addressing Adamite.
That survey is an annual survey, and we have at this point we have 9% of the Houston population thinks that the money we spend on criminal justice is wrongfully spent. Do you take
that in the paper? I saw that in the paper. Ray article, but he also asks a question on the death penalty every year.
Uh-huh.
He asks the question, what do you think is a proper punishment for capital murder? And he gives a couple of choices, a long prison sentence. And 7 or 8 years, I think, when he's done that and asked that question, more people choose a long prison sentence than the death penalty.
Trending the correctly, and we keep on doing what you do and what I difference.
I think ultimately too long for all of us, but we have to keep at it.
Dave Atwood, thank you very much for your loyalty to the cause and your vigilance. It's there.
Will, definitely.
And you can find more about Dave Atwood by going to adp.org.
Right.
Thank you, David. And that was David Atwood of the Texas Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. The process is done. We promised at the beginning of this show is now dead. And how many? But you can go to our website, and we have execution with only 2 remarkable exceptions. When we had a complete failure of do it. But on that website, even if we don't have a program, we have the back page and all at a time. Where the rubber meets the road, Jim, I'm going to ask you to change
sure.
back with some more Jim Skelton later. But Paris Carringer has, is that correct, Paris? Am I pronounced Karen. That? Paris Carringer is Rhodes' son.
That's one way to put it.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, usually when I'm asked quite a lot across the nation, I was here the last time they did an execution in Huntsville, and mostly I listened to the families. It was like to face execution six different times, because there were a lot of games played around it, where that what they call a death watch cell for observation for the last 2 weeks is... Mm-hmm.
Just says there's not much difference between Arizona and Texas.
Yeah, well, whether you got to stay early or not, huge cells until the last few hours, because that other inmates about how that you were whining and crying and the rest of that.
Part of the culture.
The execution doesn't happen in a vacuum. They run you through hope, take away, and the intent is to make sure that when they get around to the actual execution, there's none of that defiant thing that might show up in the press. Mm-hmm. They don't want to have to be dragging somebody in there screaming and crying and begging and carrying on. And the inmates, because of the nature of what's being done to them, they tend to get this closed-off attitude. It has nothing to do with what the real person was all about.
Mm-hmm.
Death row are the ones who were intellectually deficient in one way or another, or stone-cold broke. They lacked any kind of social fabric that would assist them. They are the train.
You spent 17 years, 21 total.
Actually, 60 days. And by the time that they let me out, I was in a wheelchair. Mostly because you spend that much time in a cell that's 5 wide and 7 long,
mm-hmm.
you lose the ability to walk.
You get out.
Besides that,
How many of these last-minute reprieves did you... How many?
Six times.
Six times you were lined up.
Yeah, lined up. They would... kick it off 3 or 4 hours from execution before that they let me know. I was actually expecting the U.S. Supreme Court to flip it back in a case out of California called White.
Yes,
I was a paralegal for almost 19 years in there. Mm-hmm. Pretty much kept track of who was going to be in need of an attorney, and I would make my contacts by the time a little Rolodex full of names and addresses of people who'd help.
Mercy.
But... suffer now from PTSD. That's not going away.
Of course.
Away.
I mean, that part of your sanity is... But anybody that went through PTSD and coped with it for the rest of... What do you do with the anger? Go fishing.
You see...
It out on Pisces. That's what you do, right?
Well, you know, it's one of them deals. And I spend it torturing fish.
Okay.
But we have this kind of... the death row experience, and it's universally amongst all of them. Got this attitude, and that's the way that's going to go, and you have to know what hurt.
This show is about you and your case.
Yes.
But just so that when I went to TDCJ.
Yeah.
So close.
I was going to do
life on way.
Yeah. I never know what to say to people. This is a lie.
No, nobody understands you and me.
Nope. And we're the only ones who have the right to crack a joke and nobody else be able to say you don't have any right to say that.
Yeah.
But I have watched, and it seems to me like that we are making a whole crowd of victims that are a black hole into society. Mm-hmm. Every time somebody loses their right to vote, fewer and fewer, I can't vote now. Yet they want me to run out
there.
Where
do you live?
I technically live in Oklahoma.
Okay. Well, I see in Texas, I'm an ex-convict, and I can vote. So I am part of Texas.
Is this something where you had to have the change from the original state or what?
All Texans who have completed vote in Texas. Even if you did your time in Oklahoma, Texas, if you're off paper, you can register.
And qualify to be a Texan. Anyway, the situations comes down to is that in the family that's... There will be this family myth that grows up around mm-hmm. them. A society. Watch this hole get bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, 4.5 million a year that are a lost system in any year? Imagine that doubled and tripled, or whoever this is, got a rod very long before you begin to understand the people who do not trust government having the authority to kill wrong. They're not very good at backing up.
They're wrong a lot.
Oh, yes, act. And the heavier the crime gets, the more likely they are to be wrong, because if it's a small enough deal, the guy can make some kind of a plea bargain. There is some kind of closure because he says what happens. It doesn't work that way, because nobody can afford to plead guilty to something that puts them in prison the rest of their life, thing where it's an automatic fight to the finish. And before very long, the state doesn't care.
Paris, what happens on the row when somebody doesn't come back?
Well, we play games with the guards. You shut up. You just watch them. You don't answer to your name, nothing. If you want to do it, the one thing they don't like is a bunch of quiet inmates, because that means they got something on their mind, and they ain't. It isn't just ex. Sometimes there are situations where a lot of us are, and there's no way for us to tell us want to by then.
Yeah, you have to live there.
It's the strangest kind of. It's not really abnormal for it. These people are not really paranoid. Somebody is trying to kill them. So, you know, from there you draw your own specifics and you go on.
As you go through a process of trying to prevent executed, how important is outside?
For me, it was absolutely necessary. I was always in letters to the outside. I was always in tapes to the outside. I probably wrote every 2 or 3 months. A lot of times I was bumming money to make our next stage where we'd get, I'm not by myself, but I did most of it by myself. But I worked with Amnesty International and the Friends Society and the Sojourners, a quick group of people who objected to what was going on. But we also had Arizona's Vision of Justice and Joe Arpaio. So,
does that not just on this issue, but other issues as well?
The joke is he's got the reputation as being the toughest sheriffs around, because the only one he pulls that on are the people doing it. Anybody else says, you come on in here and talk that crap. And he, but they play games. Mostly it's around funding and budgeting. They have turned it into Arizona's number one business. And that is not what it's supposed to be about. Whipping boys. And we tend to...
Have you gotten out of the culture, or are you still in the culture?
The way I respond to things?
Yeah.
I'm still in it.
There's no way out of it.
No, there is no way out of it.
I've only been out 35 years, and I haven't found a way out of it at all.
Well, I tell people, if you're intending to ever let a man out, you should not put him in for around 5 years. He has become indoctrinated to a different vision looking at things.
You know, they've had my teeth.
Yes.
And I'm a member of the Angola Lifers Association, actually. And I go down to Angola and visit. And there's some of them old men that have been there. They're in their 80s, if they let them, have to build another institution to hold them.
Yeah. My attorneys talk at me because they say that I'm head and shoulders above what most of them walk out of.
One old ex-convict to another. You're doing pretty good.
There is not so good, and I'm no longer improving. You turn a couple of corners on me, and I can't find my way back. You get me a little anxious, put me in a corner. I'm going to begin to respond in ways you're not going to like.
One of the people out here, no.
I want them crowds in front of me, and I'm
to run you off and finish the show with Jim. But let me tell you something. You and I need to sit down, preferably with do some cultural history analysis.
Not only that, but it might be one way to be able to pick and choose what the public does not understand what we're saying.
You know, I don't know if you're familiar with what I do with my other show. I've been for 30 years, so I'm beginning to get the hang of it.
Yeah.
I'm on every Friday night with Webb, so wherever you are, you can tap in.
Yeah,
and Elizabeth will give you contact information for me. I'll just somehow let me know you're calling, and I will call because we've got a longer conversation to have.
You know, it's weird that that is a thing you have to think about.
That is Paris. Let me get this pronunciation right. Carriger in there, Paris Carriger, who spent 21 years or nearly 21 years. He is a survivor. He is a brother. He is a friend. Mercy, Jim, you listened to that conversation. That was an interesting conversation. It's like visiting from another world.
You know, something that I just don't think people are interested in. There are some things that you can't relate to, and I think what you've gone through and what he went through, most of us don't understand.
It's kind of like, you know, and I actually landed in Hanoi. Way during my trip in Vietnam, the Americans were shooting at me. And all I had, I couldn't shoot back. I had a pencil and a piece of paper. But if the bullets are coming in, not because the bullets are coming in, those people are trying to kill you. And then the rest of the trip after Da Nang headed south, it was the other side that was shooting at me. So I had no friends. I came back totally opposed to the war. But to sit down and explain to somebody that hasn't shoved their face in the mud to get away from a passing bullet, don't have an experience. And to an even greater degree, in a society where every couple of months, somebody who you had conversation and maybe played checkers or chess or had a sandwich with a couple of months.
The only thing I can think of comparable to it, and I spent hospitals and I spent a lot of time visiting with the folks that work on the cancer ward for children, and they have to rotate. You simply can't handle that when young children are continuously dying on you. And one thing I want to clarify, let's go back to this case. The question came out in Texas rather than New Mexico where they found the body.
Yeah.
Well, in capital murder cases, it's just not a murder. He was indicted for murder in the course of committing kidnapping and robbery. The robbery occurred in Texas because they had it on film when he shot through the car, and the kidnapping occurred in Texas, and the murder occurred in Texas because he confessed to it, and the body was dumped in New Mexico. Therefore, if it had been, you even had the killing occurred in New Mexico because the predicate acts for capital murder occurred in Texas because they had the kidnapping, basically, and the shooting, the first shot that she was shot with, they had it on video camera to film in El Paso, and that's why Vince.
Apparently, the only identifying item from the film was his cap.
Right. Right. Of course, that tied into his confession. What he claimed happened, this came out of his jail cell. He claimed that he and Jacques got into an argument whether to rob somebody. He did admit they were out figuring out some way to make money that night, not committing a robbery or committing a robbery. He got out of the car. He claimed he hid in some bushes, rolled a joint, and smoked it, headed back to an apartment, got picked up by three girls. And so I guess he's that's what his later story was when he was in the jail cell. But like I say, none of that made any sense.
Vehicle, in this case, is her vehicle.
Right. They took her car out. That's when they first did the initial robbery. They shot her in the face because she went back to the ATM a second. And after in El Paso, and then they shot her, then took her body, because it's not too far to New Mexico to dump her body. No. They took her body, because that's a desert area out there, and that's what they just dumped her body there.
If you've ever flown over it, you know exactly what it looks like. It looks nicer from the freeway, because it
looks nice, a whole lot better.
Yeah. I've been to waters where there are other kinds of shootings.
Again, going back to what you guys talked about, it is extremely difficult, as lawyers convey this to a jury, the terrible damage that prison does to people. A named Stanley Kirk, who came down here and said as visiting judge, never give over 5 years to anybody for anything. And he just simply said, if 5 years isn't going to do it, 20's not going to do it. And what it does, a lot of marriages go sour after 5 years. Sure. And this marriage between the convict and TDC, and what we end up doing is produce, like our juvenile system for years, produce people that ended up on death row. Because I remember when I helped Will Gray with a series of death penalty cases, something like something like a third of everybody on death row had been raised in reform school. Hill. And I think we've never talked enough about the nasty we can do to start people from committing crimes. And truth is one of those unique things, because usually murder is a crime of passion. And when people are angry and lash out thinking about anger. And so often those that kill, if you eliminate the serial killers and some of those that are sociopaths.
Numbers. Yeah.
That's right. And when you kill somebody, normally that person makes an ideal inmate. They usually are the best of all people who've been in a lot of trouble before.
Yeah, I heard one old prison warden, I think it was Willett, that said, and Willett presided over his governorship, and when you execute a killer, he would only wanted to kill one person.
Right.
Almost all the cases, and they're already dead. And there was an interesting case, I remember, the Prime Minister of Sweden was murdered years under the Swedish courts. And there was an outrage in Stockholm. People were demonstrating, thinking that punishment. And the murder rate in Sweden did not shoot up.
No. And something else I was curious about, I never could find anything when I had a very, very famous case that In Cold Blood was based on when Perry Smith, a psychiatrist in the Menninger Clinics.
Destroyed a fine writer's mind.
Right. Neither man alone would have kind of the two personalities created a third psychological. And anytime you have somebody kind of jacking each other up, what to do to get money, you have two guys out on the prowl looking for money. A lot of time, I was real curious to try to find out something about the relationship between these guys. And it's real interesting because the idea of a mob psychology also that case and the Perry Smith case, that neither man would have committed the murder by
than mob stuff. Because a very important case to me, that was the one the police right. would not investigate it, and I had right. to solve that case. And I solved it by using the media and only publicized gay bash case. Mm-hmm. Of the culprits in that case were absolutely incapable.
By themselves of doing it, probably.
Of that crime, by them. Were absolutely incapable. Even acting as a group, four of them refused to participate, but they also refused. And nobody, I have analyzed that case nine ways from Sunday because I'm still struggling to get those culprits out of prison. Best of, I think, the very best of reasons, although we're never sure of your own motivations and the quality.
Not been convicted and gone free, they would have... This is why I have...
I think what I... is they avoided one another.
For shame.
Finished analyzing that, Jim.
Okay.
I haven't finished analyzing, but I do know there was a conscious effort to avoid each of the others there. It was that two of them were brothers, so they didn't have much choice to avoid one another. But they stuck to themselves and stayed away from it.
This is what bothers me about a lot of these cases we try, because it's kind of like locking the barn, the door after the horse has been stolen. It's
sure.
And we have never met the responsibility of TDC for creating people that they later turn out in society normal, but they don't think like you, like people who've not been.
Harris got it. You
right.
know, we will go through life, and as long as everything is operating smoothly and there's no bumps in the road and everything, it just blend into the crowd. But the minute something exceptional happens, we will react from regular people who have not had our
just
experience.
Just like people who've been in combat react differently when they hear sure. a noise.
Sure. It's instinctive. It is part of a subculture. And it may be more than a culture.
Has it changed with diminished?
I don't know. Jim, my explanation is I never really
can today, show. Even when you're
60. Yeah, and I'm 70 years old. I will be 70 this year. And it hasn't gone away. But it's time the producer, executive producer, Elizabeth Ann Stein, has just notified me, and you can reach her at her email address, steinea@yahoo.com. Technical director normally would be Otis McClay, but we have got a substitute technical director
tonight.
Afshar Karash has been stand in for Otis. However, we've worked him over the telephone pretty soon. Death by Texas is by Victoria Panetti, and you can reach her on her MySpace page, which is myspace.com/shema. I usually host this program. Our legal expert is Jim Skelton. Although, if Jim gets tied up on something, this program is possible because of the creative imagination of Elizabeth Stein, our executive director. I want to thank Perrin, and also wish to thank our reporters, Dennis Longmire from Huntsville and Dave Atwood from Houston. This is Execution Watch, KPFT Houston, and good night.
Or perspective on any of the news stories that you hear on the BBC World Service, then visit our blog at worldhaveyoursay.com. You can comment on current debates or suggest your own.
In Beijing, Kampala,
Reykjavik.
You're listening to KPFT, Houston 90.1.